This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, March 23rd of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, Denver's East High School experienced the second school shooting of the semester yesterday as state lawmakers discussed gun violence prevention legislation. Public schools in Colorado will offer free universal school meals to all students beginning in August. We'll hear how the program is rolling out in a county where most voters rejected the measure. Then, Radio Nibbles host John Lindorf will be in with a guest to discuss bad behavior at restaurants. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. After that, it's a public affair. Today, Sam Fuqua takes a look at the Silicon Valley Bank bailout, inflation, and campaign finance with Thomas Ferguson, research director at the Institute for New Economic Thinking. Coming up at 9 o'clock, it's the Radio Book Club, KGNU's monthly collaboration with the Boulder Bookstore. Today, we'll hear from Stephen Graham Jones, a Native American writer of horror fiction. We'll hear him discuss his latest book, Don't Fear the Reaper, the second book in the Indian Lake trilogy. Today's show was recorded live at the Boulder Bookstore. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's John Kellen.
The search for a 17-year-old suspect in a shooting at Denver's East High School ended in Park County last night near the town of Bailey, with the discovery of a body near a car believed to be the suspect's. While there's been no official identification, authorities did lift a shelter-in-place order for the immediate vicinity. Discovery of the body came after a day-long search. A law enforcement source told 9 News that it is the suspect's body and that he appears to have taken his own life. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has more.
One of the two East High School staffers wounded in yesterday's shooting has been released from the hospital, while another remains hospitalized in critical condition after surgery. Police say a 17-year-old student identified as Austin Lyle shot 2 men as they searched him for weapons. The student was required to submit to searches to enter the building. Police say the student fled the area after the shooting, prompting a large-scale search. School officials said the suspect was searched daily because of his past behavior, and that so-called safety plans, such as those searches, are common. Classes at East High School are canceled for the rest of this week, but will resume after spring break, which begins Monday. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
After the shooting, Governor Jared Polis said students and teachers deserve safe schools and parents deserve peace of mind that their kids are safe in the classroom. The incident has renewed calls for the passage of gun safety laws in Colorado. We'll have more on this story after the headlines. The shooting at East High School came on the 2-year anniversary of the mass shooting at a King Soopers store where 10 people were killed, including Boulder police officer Eric Talley, as well as King Soopers employees and customers. E-Town Hall on Spruce Street hosted the Boulder Strong Day of Remembrance gathering. About 200 people came out to acknowledge the collective trauma and the lost lives. Attendees included Boulder Mayor Aaron Brockett and Governor Polis. The mayor said the city is committed to supporting all those whose lives were impacted by the tragedy. Ellen Mahoney, whose husband Kevin died in the shooting, said the lessons of King Soopers include the need to address mental health issues and ban assault weapons. Starbucks workers in 4 Colorado stores joined over 100 nationwide stores yesterday in a strike demanding basic rights against the Seattle-based company. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Denver, Colorado Springs, and Superior Starbucks workers joined other nationwide workers in yesterday's strike in what Starbucks Workers United called a national day of action. The Westminster store workers have announced they have unionized, joining more than 280 Starbucks stores nationwide. Starbucks Workers United joined together Wednesday to demand basic rights like livable wages with consistent scheduling, safe and respectful workplaces, and the right to organize free from fear and intimidation as pressure mounts from what Starbucks Workers United says is the company's illegal union busting. Yesterday's strike comes before the company shareholders vote on whether to do an assessment of Starbucks labor practices at today's annual shareholders meeting. The protest comes just 1 week before former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz is set to testify before the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions about the illegal anti-union bullying campaign he spearheaded that has included numerous labor law violations, according to several National Labor Relations Board judges. Schultz only agreed to testify under the threat of subpoena. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
State lawmakers announced yesterday they've revised a measure intended to limit unexpected hospital bills in Colorado. A restructured House Bill 1215 aims to address facility fees and improve transparency for consumers. Facility fees are defined as charges that come in addition to those for actual services, often to the surprise of the patient. They can be from hundreds to thousands of dollars on top of expected fees. In a press release issued yesterday, lawmakers said they revised the bill after listening to the concerns of consumers, providers, and hospitals. Avalanche warnings have been issued throughout parts of western Colorado. The Colorado Avalanche Information Center posted high and extreme avalanche warnings Wednesday. They identified areas in the San Juan and Sangre de Cristo Mountains as being especially dangerous. People are advised to avoid all potential avalanche terrain. At least 10 skiers have been caught in avalanches in Colorado since last Friday, and two of them died. In today's weather outlook, we have patchy fog in Boulder this morning, a chance of rain and snow through the greater Denver area this afternoon, although no accumulation is expected. In Denver, the National Weather Service says the high temperature should be 53 degrees. In Fort Collins, a high of about 51, 48 in Boulder, and up in Nederland, look for a high of 33 degrees. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. The search for a student allegedly responsible for shooting two school administrators at East High School in Denver Wednesday morning ended last night with the discovery of a body believed to be that of the suspect. Speaking at a press conference yesterday morning, Denver Police Chief Ron Thomas said the shooting happened just before 10 a.m. during a security screening of a student.
As part of a safety plan, they were undergoing a search. During that search, obviously a weapon was retrieved, a handgun was retrieved, and several shots were fired, striking those two individuals.
Two shooting victims were transported to local hospitals where one underwent surgery. The suspect fled the scene and was later identified as 17-year-old Austin Lyle. On Wednesday afternoon, police said Lyle's vehicle had been found in Park County and issued a shelter-in-place order for the neighboring community. Later in the evening, the Park County Sheriff said they had found a body near the car, but did not then officially confirm the body was that of the suspect. School district officials have decided to close East High for the rest of the week. Dr. Alex Marrero, superintendent of the Denver Public School District, said there will be increased security at the school for the remainder of the school year. He added that school district officials are looking at returning police officers, or school resource officers, to schools. In 2020, the district voted to end its relationship with the Denver Police Department.
We will have two armed officers here at East until the end of the school year. We're looking forward to expanding that conversation to see how we can reestablish a relationship with presence at our schools, in particular our high schools.
Wednesday's shootings came 6 weeks after 16-year-old student Luis Garcia was shot in his car outside of the school. He died 2 weeks later. That shooting prompted hundreds of students to march on the state capitol earlier this month, demanding action on gun violence. Clara Taub, a sophomore at East High, spoke at the Capitol on March 3rd. She says it's a scary time to be in high school.
I think as students, we are especially vulnerable because we don't have a lot of control, and there's a lot of youth violence right now, especially in Denver. So we're really just trying to make that change and protect our peers, protect our friends by doing things like this.
Democrats at the State House have introduced two gun reform bills. One would allow people to sue gun manufacturers, and another that would expand red flag laws. Some East High students had been scheduled to testify in favor of the bills on Wednesday. Some family members of the people killed in the King Soopers shooting in Boulder did testify on what was also the second anniversary of the shooting. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. We'll be right back after this break. Most Colorado school districts will be offering free school meals to all students beginning in August. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KVNF's Cassie Knust reports on how the program is rolling out in Montrose County, where over half of voters disapproved of the initiative in last November's election.
It's still a little bit of a fluid situation right now.
That was Preston Weaver, Montrose County School District's Nutrition General Manager. I recently sat down with Preston to discuss the school district's plan for rolling out the new state-funded Universal Meals Program.
They're learning from the USDA as they come down, figuring out ways to ensure that the rollout of this new program goes off without a hitch.
This new program, known as the Healthy Meals for All program, was voted in by over 57% of Coloradans last fall and is on pace to roll out over the next two school years. While advocates say this will feed hungry students and remove stigmas surrounding participation in free school meals, opponents argue that it's not the state's job to feed students whose families can afford the meals. They also say that feeding kids is the responsibility of parents and caregivers. Although the proposition easily passed statewide, much of Colorado's rural and conservative-leaning counties voted against the program. Over half of Delta and Montrose counties respectively opposed the initiative.
I think one of the caveats is the level of taxes that are going to be used to fund the Healthy School Meals for All is, you know, you have to have a threshold of $300,000 or more for an individual or $450,000 for family taxpayers. I'm not saying that people in the community don't make that, but it is probably going to be a smaller pool of Montrose residents that are impacting that and entering those funds. That was the biggest caveat. Obviously, you see taxes automatically going to be giant red flags, but if you read through the verbiage, and the verbiage wasn't super clear either, I can at least attest to that because I had to read through it a couple of times to make sure I was understanding it as well. But I think that was probably the biggest hiccup for it swinging either way.
Program funding helps eligible districts pay for things like food, kitchen equipment, and labor. It also provides optional funding to purchase local food from Colorado farmers and ranchers. But in order to opt into the state Universal Free Meals program, districts must maximize the amount of federal meal dollars they receive by applying to a program known as the Community Eligibility Provision. State schools that don't qualify for the federal program can still utilize the new state program. However, families, such as those in Montrose County, will still need to fill out applications for subsidized meals.
The easiest way for me to explain how this is going to work is that we'll use 100 kids as an example. If you have 25 kids that are free, 25 kids that are reduced, and 50 kids that are paid, we'll still get reimbursements from the federal government. And that's going to be the biggest thing that we're looking for is we're trying to maximize the federal reimbursement as opposed to going through the state. That's why the free and reduced applications have been pushed. They'll still be pushed. They're still, you know, they still need to be filled out. And so we'll maximize the amount of federal return.
Reporting for the Rocky Mountain Community Radio and KVNF, I'm Cassie Knust.
It's time for Radio Nibbles. And if you've eaten out much in the past year, you may have noticed an unfortunate trend. Diners at local restaurants are getting ruder. On today's Radio Nibbles, John Lindorf welcomes a Boulder journalist who has looked into the bad behavior pandemic. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Shannon, and welcome everybody around the gigantic Radio Nibbles breakfast table. As always, on Wednesday, it's either foggy, rainy, snowy, or icy, and that's good for the farmers, and that makes me happy. But sadly, I'm not surprised by the story, which appeared recently by Jessica Mordek, food and drink writer at Boulder Reporting Lab, which is an independent news source. And she's originally from Chicago and has a journalism degree. And I'm so glad there's someone else covering food in Boulder. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I was taken by your story on rude patrons, because as I've gotten back to dining, I've seen a lot of examples of it. I wanted to dive a little deeper into it. So let's talk a little bit about what we're calling what's rude behavior.
Yes, absolutely. So my first source that I talked to for this story and kind of learned a little bit more about it was Steve Redzikowski over at Oak at 14th, and he expressed that while a majority of diners at their restaurant are perfectly respectful,
sure,
and pleasant,
yeah,
the incidents of rude behaviors have gotten more severe and more frequent in the last couple of years over the pandemic, mm-hmm, but even tracing a little, mm-hmm, bit further back before, mm-hmm, then.
But we're talking about, it's not just people not saying thank you, it's confrontations.
Correct. The example that he gave that I included in the story was a pair of women who came in, one of them took off her shoes and started rubbing her feet at the table, and then when he asked what they wanted to order, she responded rudely that they were having a conversation and wanted to be left alone. So he said, okay, you know, the server said, flag me down when you're ready to order, and she said, F off. So they asked him to leave. So stuff like that, that's people being aggressive and confrontational and ruder than restaurant staff have experienced in the past.
And the question arises, are they any more rude than they were before the pandemic?
Right.
By the way, folks, it's almost 3 years exactly since all the restaurants shut down.
Mm-hmm.
During the pandemic, it seemed for a while people were a tad more understanding and appreciative.
Right. And it seemed from the people that I interviewed that was kind of the expectation that they were hoping for coming out of the pandemic. And in reality, that was not necessarily the case. But again, some of the people that I talked to said that these rude behavior incidents traced as far back to as kind of the timeline that they said was the 2016 election. And I'm not sure if that's Trump inciting people to lash out or feel emboldened to behave a certain way, or what that looks like. But
I'm kind of curious if it's the rise of social media also with like viral videos.
And that could be too.
I've been seeing a lot. I mean, around that 2016 thing, you see lots of examples of people being rude, like in grocery stores. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of wondering if social media might be part of it as well.
I think there's a couple of other sort of things tied in with this. During the pandemic, a lot of people who were servers, veteran servers and cooks and hosts and everything else, went on to other professions.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to, because, you know, that wasn't there. So, in essence, a lot of restaurants, even long-time restaurants, just simply don't have the a staff that's been there forever. They're still training them.
Right. That was definitely a sentiment that I heard as well. With once restaurants started reopening after the pandemic, there was kind of a new crop of staff and servers, a lot of who didn't necessarily have restaurant experience. And when that happens, the quality of serving can go down just because they have a little bit of less knowledge about the industry, which then, you know, customers can kind of identify that and play into that when the servers don't have as much knowledge as previous, mm-hmm, people have in their experience. So
I don't want to get too zen about this. I also think, you know, I spent 8 years being a dining critic, and this was before cell phones, as I'm sitting here holding one in my hand.
Yep.
And I used to have to steal menus and other things, because you couldn't just whip out a pad and pen, and nobody had cell phones. But what I did notice was that because of that, people were there. People were present in the moment, eating with their friends and family. And now, you know, inevitably food comes to the table and somebody, occasionally it's me because I'm working, but, you know, the food has to sit there and be photographed and videoed. And it's part of a larger question about the impact of social media.
Right. Yeah. Another thing that I heard about but didn't necessarily include in this story was a part of the reason that you might have this increased worsening behavior over the pandemic was because a lot of people were learning to cook at home when restaurants were closed. And then when restaurants reopen, they return and they have this set of expectations about what they prefer in the kitchen and what they prefer to eat, which doesn't necessarily align with the menu that a chef in the restaurant has prepared for the night.
Right. And then there's the picky problem. You know, I talk to the chefs and they try to accommodate all eating regimens, you know, having something vegan and gluten-free. And sometimes, you know, and I've witnessed this, it's like an inquisition of the server or the host or whatever, you know, about the nature of the food. See, I think all of that stuff is, you should do your homework beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Find out about the restaurant and, you know, before you go in and start attacking people.
Right.
The other factor in all this is money. Restaurant prices are up because they have to be.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've heard a lot of complaints about from the customer side of things, too, is that 15% fair wage fee that we're seeing pop up on a lot of menus recently. And, you know, where is that money going? Does it actually benefit the restaurant staff more than the previous mode of tipping had? And
I think that probably is another story that
it's a whole other conversation.
That one of us needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, I worked in a lot of restaurants back of the house as a cook. And the differential in pay between the front and the back is severe. And some restaurants have added a 15% living wage fee. And people don't understand it, or they say, well, just go ahead and, you know, make the food prices reflect what you know. But as my friend Dan Asher said, you know, people aren't going to pay $25 for a cheeseburger.
Nope. Yeah.
Or $20 for eggs and bacon.
Right. It's a good point.
So, John,
yes.
Looking at the time, I want to ask you, what's in your nibbles column today?
In my nibbles column today, it's sort of related. I've noticed that brunch has made a comeback. It is... people are going back out, and places are doing brunch on the weekend. So I talked to three chefs who have restarted brunch and talked to them a little bit about that. So that's today in the Nibbles column in the Boulder Weekly. And Jess, you have a current article out about...
Yes. My article that was posted this past week was looking at a Bon Appetit article that came out in 2010 that called Boulder one of America's foodiest cities and listed a couple of restaurants here that were great and lovely and are still open today. So I talked to a couple of the restaurants mentioned and looked at how they'd changed and revamped since 2010 in the past decade or so and continue to stay relevant in the restaurant industry.
And, you know, traditionally Radio Nibbles ends with me being asked, what's the best thing you've tasted lately? But I'm going to turn that over to you. Have you tasted anything good lately?
Yes. I have really been enjoying Faro in Niwot.
Niwot,
yes. They do great work there. And supposedly their 90% of their menu is sourced within 10 miles. So a lot of really good, fresh food and... desserts.
And you'd be happy to know Jess also mentioned pupusa lovers, too.
Okay. Yes. See, everybody needs to, you know, take us seriously. How about you, John? What's the best thing you've eaten recently?
Well, actually, it was a poached eggs and tomato sauce that I made the other night for myself. I did want to mention that I wanted to thank everyone who contributed to our recent membership drive. Thank you so much. Thank you to the food folks who fed us and donated. And we still have some spots left in the Ozo Coffee Hinman Pie pairing tasting event coming up, if you're interested.
And I did want to take these last few seconds to mention something that I saw that was food related that may be of interest to you or to restaurant owners across Boulder County, that the county is now providing a program to, or at least the city, maybe it's the city, has a program, the PACE program, given that composting is changing starting April 1st. It's to help with the transition to get on board with the reusable takeout containers.
Yes.
So any restaurant owner may want to check out Boulder County's PACE program. And with that, thank you, John. Thank you, Jessica. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to John Callen, Steve Miller, Alyssa Palazzo, Alexis Kenyon, Maeve Conran, Cassie Canoose, John Lindorf, and his guest Jessica Mordock for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a public affair with Sam Fuqua. That's going to be followed by the Radio Book Club just after these news headlines from the BBC.